Happy Pride, everyone. Well, on my way out of town, catching a flight to O'Hare, my girlfriend Kelly Simpkins and I talk about our very first Pride, plus her fanny packs. What was that about? And what is the superior donut? Leave us a comment. Tell us what you think yours is. And also, I sit down and talk with openly lesbian, award-winning director Tina Landau, who is in town. Company member of Steppenwolf Theater Company is in town to direct the new Tracy Letts play, Superior Donuts. I'm really hungry. Is Krispy Kreme open?
Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming.
American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 222. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Kelly Simpkins.
And we're driving to O'Hare.
O'Hare. Where do you get your weave? O'Hare. O'Hare.
I just vibrated.
Wow.
Just vibrated and I'm talking. Lots of things are going on that we're sharing with the podcasters. How are you? No, I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm very excited about our show today. And I'm very excited that you're on with me. First of all, happy Gay Pride.
Thank you
coming,
much.
Coming
happy
around
Pride.
To the end.
It is.
Proud to be with you.
I'm waving an imaginary colorful flag.
Do you remember your first Pride parade?
You know,
was it in Indiana? Was it like 12 people?
Oh, good God, no. No, never went to one. They don't have one in Indiana.
Yeah, they don't really have one in Tennessee. Maybe
it was in New York, and I'm trying to remember the very, very first one, and I can't place that, but I drank a lot at those Pride festivals, so
yeah.
Some of them are a blur. Lots
yeah.
of like, woo, girl, get it, girl. And then like going home to nap and like going out again.
Cutoffs and wife beaters.
Cutoffs and well, I don't know about the wife beater.
Hats.
I'm sure I had some horrible pair of
Birkenstocks.
No, I wasn't into those yet, but I'm sure I had a fanny pack on, if
ooh.
That says anything.
Wow, I met you at the right time, obviously.
It was a key
Your
moment
fashion
of...
forward moment.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I remember my first Gay Pride was up here, and I had moved to Chicago, and I was living in Boys Town around Lakeview, and I was living at Hawthorne and Broadway, for anybody in town. That's, really just, you know, right in the heart of it all, and the parade went right past, and I was seeing somebody, kind of, and
went to the parade. Couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe there were that many people, and I couldn't believe that it was like the grocery store had a float and the police were in the parade.
The grocery store,
the Dominick's and the Jewel had a big shopping cart. It was a huge shopping cart that went down and
filled with gay fruits or just fruits, I could
just
say.
Just fruits. And then all the drag queens and the Dykes on Bikes.
I remember the Dykes on Bikes. I remember the packs of people.
Yeah.
And the boys. I remember the boys, and I remember the topless
Smooth.
Dykes on Bikes. And I remember all the, the boop, boop kind of guys.
Music. Oh, yeah.
The little string kind of G-stringy
thong
kind of dancing guys on floats and all of the P
Glitter.
Flag thing. I remember seeing the P flag and all the I love my gay son and
that
I love
was
my
what
gay
I
granddaughter
remember.
And those things. I mean, I remember the first time I saw the parade with those kinds of signs and how moving that was.
Yeah, I remember that just made me cry.
Yeah.
I couldn't, at the time I wasn't out to my parents, so I kind of could not fathom. And I wasn't really a part of the active GLBT community. I mean, I wasn't either. I was sleeping with women, but I had gay friends, but actually I had more straight friends at the time than gay friends when I moved here, and I wasn't an activist. I just wasn't engaged at all. I mean, I don't know at the time. It's a different time, but I just wasn't engaged, you know. But I do remember seeing the P flag parents and just crying. Like, it made me cry. I remember where I was standing on Broadway, right in front of the closet, and I was sobbing. It was so moving to me. And it still is. I mean, it's still, to me, probably my favorite part of the parade. And I remember before I moved here, there was a huge march on Washington. I think it was in 1992. 92, 93. And I remember it was televised on, C-SPAN.
Huh.
And I remember we had a bunch of people over for a cookout or something on the Sunday afternoon. I was doing a play. I was working in a theater company in Memphis. And we had a bunch of people over. And I remember having that on television and watching C-SPAN and watching all these people get up and make speeches. Martina Navratilova and all the organizations. And that kind of felt like me watching a parade, but it wasn't in a city. I wasn't physically there. But I remember that being extremely moving, and the performances, and it's really, I mean, that you kind of don't forget the first time that Well, clearly you have.
I mean, I don't even know if I was out at the first one I went to.
Yeah.
I know that I went with all these gay men that I worked at a restaurant with, I think, and was just in shock.
Yeah.
Just thought they were, it was just crazy. I mean, in New York,
we just went over a train track.
It is so big, and there's so many people, and there's so many just queer people all over the place that it is such a big sight to take in if you are, you know, from a small town and have never seen from that at all, and incredibly moving and incredibly emotional and really just thrilling and incredibly intoxicating to just watch everyone, gay and straight people, being so happy to be there and happy to be gay and supporting, you know, the LGBT community.
I don't know if New York is the same, but as you saw here in Chicago, I mean, there are so many straight allies who come out, and it really becomes kind of a neighborhood thing, and it's really kind of wonderful that it's become, I think, one of the more anticipated parades in our city, and we have a lot of parades, you know.
I've never been to the parade here.
You've never been to the parade here?
No.
Well, then you're missing out. I know you're always working, so
yeah,
that's how come you miss it. But I'm really excited also. Well, we digress, but happy Pride. I'm really excited as well.
Musical bridge.
La-da-da, you know, maybe we should go. Let's go do some news. We'll tell you what's going on in the news world, and then we'll come back. All right.
Welcome to Camp Camp,
America's premier summer camp for GLBT adults. Dozens of daily activities like swimming, softball, and tennis. And special evening programs every night.
The tea dance was a lot of fun.
I love the barn dance. That's my favorite part of camp.
The talent show. I absolutely love the talent show.
Remember when summer was the best time ever?
Well, it still is.
Camp Camp.
August 24th through the 31st. Visit campcamp.com.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News. Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa showed his support for gay marriage by officiating his first gay wedding. The wedding took place a week after same-sex marriages became legal in California following a groundbreaking Supreme Court decision that lifted the state's ban on gay marriage. The Los Angeles mayor wed filmmaker Bruce Cohen, who won an Oscar for American Beauty, and his partner, Gabrielle Catone, at City Hall. San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom has also officiated several same-sex marriages.
A Florida lesbian is suing a Miami hospital for being denied visitation of her partner despite showing that she had power of attorney. In February 2007, Janice Langbin's partner of 18 years, Lisa Marie Pond, suffered a stroke while they vacationed with their children. Langbin recently filed a federal lawsuit that charges Miami's Jackson Memorial Hospital with being anti-gay and negligent. Langbin was only allowed to see her dying partner for 5 minutes during the nearly 20 hours she was admitted.
Arizona will not have a marriage amendment on the November ballot. State senators rejected a bill, 14-11, that would have placed a measure on the ballot to ban gay marriage by amending the state constitution. It needed 16 votes to pass. In 2006, Arizona voters rejected a ballot measure to ban gay marriage. Arizona became the first state in the U.S. to reject such a measure.
On June 20th, U.S. food company and ketchup maker Heinz pulled a television commercial featuring a kiss between two gay dads from British Airways after receiving complaints. The company received roughly 200 complaints for a recent mayonnaise commercial showing a gay family in the kitchen. One of the men is making lunches for the kids, and before the other man leaves for work, they kiss. Heinz apologized for the ad, and a U.K. spokesperson for the company said the commercial was merely a humorous take on a slice of life. Gay rights group Stonewall and others are threatening to boycott Heinz for caving under conservative pressure.
Playboy founder Hugh Hefner will reveal he once had gay sex in a new authorized biography penned by Stephen Watts. The book, Mr. Playboy, Hugh Hefner and the American Dream, reveals that Hefner's gay sex tryst happened at a bar in Chicago, although the location and date are not named. Hefner backs up Watts' book and has said that he found his experience with a man interesting, but never did it again.
In an interview with Howard Stern, singer-songwriter Carly Simon put the lesbian rumors to bed, saying she never slept with a woman because she was too uptight. However, Simon said, "I wish I had. I think that I'm too old for that now." She also joked that she has a boyfriend who's almost a woman.
And that's the Weekend News, brought to you by Windy City Times.
So we're very excited still. And prideful. Prideful.
Why are you Irish suddenly?
I'm prideful.
I'm a gay leprechaun.
Well, because we were just saying, we should just say briefly that you've just started a new show over at Steppenwolf that's going to be a part of the First Look series, which we'll talk about later in future shows.
Okay.
But it's a queer show, so that's pretty cool.
It is a queer and other show.
You're a queer and other show, but you play a lesbo.
I do.
And you're the lead character, so that's kind of groovy.
It's great.
And, I...
super groovy.
When we met, for people who don't know, it was because some theater people said, "Amy, Kelly's in town. She's gay. She's a lesbian. She's lonely. You should meet her." And then people said to you...
Was that their intro?
You should meet Amy. She's gay. She's a lesbian. She's lonely. You should meet her. And, you happened to be in town at Steppenwolf, and I think once we finally met, and one of the things that was intriguing to me before I met you, and I avoided meeting you quite staunchly, I might add, is that there aren't a lot of lesbians in theater. It's not like theater is overrun by gay men, which is, fabulous and has definitely shaped my life in many ways.
But we need more lesbians.
But we are, having on the Queercast today, one of the foremost lesbians working in theater today, Miss Tina Landau. Dare I call her Dame Tina Landau.
Tina Landlian.
Landlian. Tina is in town to do the new Tracy Letts play. Tina's in town to do... That has totally different context to the gay men. That's all I'm saying.
Really?
Yeah, Tina. The drug. Never mind.
Oh, Tina,
just,
yes.
Yeah. Just stay with
it.
So, Anyhow, so to say, you know, don't advance this Pride Parade. So anyhow, Tina Landau's in town. I met her a long time ago because she came to see Xena, which was super cool. Tina came to see Xena, which is so freaking crazy that Alexandra Billings says to me, while we're doing, this was the first Xena, Alexandra said to me, she said, Amy Morton and Tina Landau are in the audience tonight. No pressure. We're just doing this little fluffy, crazy-ass play late at night for $15. We went out and had drinks afterwards, actually across the street from where I watched my very first gay pride parade.
Wow.
And,
see the connection, folks?
It's a big cycle, the world and life. But I got to go over to Steppenwolf and, this past week and sit down with Tina and talk to her about the new play, Superior Donuts, which, previews are, everyone is raving, walking out, people are standing on their feet, and if you have been living under a rock.
What else are they standing on?
I don't know. On their feet. Their knees, their shins, I don't know. But, we really had a great, great conversation about what it is to be a lesbian in theater, which she said nobody had ever asked her a lot of those questions, or it's not usually what she gets to talk about, but she is at the helm of the new Tracy Letts play, which fresh off his Pulitzer and Tony Award win, so it's really, really extraordinary.
Yeah.
And I would imagine...
It's been an incredible, glorious year for the Steppenwolf folks.
It has been. So we're going to tell you what else is going on in the theater world, and then we'll be back with Tina Landau. It's Tina.
And by the way, what is the Superior Donut? I think the cruller, the French cruller.
Ooh. See, I liked the chocolate cream filled when I was going to the Dunkin' Donuts as a child.
Not the Bavarian cream?
No, the chocolate cream.
The cruller, I'm sticking with that.
Are you?
Yep.
I like a toasted coconut donut, actually.
Of course you do.
Of course I do. Anything with coconut, I'm really all about. And you'd have to have a girlfriend to maybe really know that, but it's true.
She loves the cocoa nut.
I love cocoa for the coconut. Yeah, I don't know. It's too bad I didn't ask Tina what the Superior Donut is, but maybe I can get her to call in and tell us on a
future
show.
Maybe so. It's exciting. It sounds like a great show, and I can't wait to see the show. I love her as a theater artist in the world, and her previous works. I've seen a lot of stuff she's done, and Tracy Letts is obviously a really phenomenal writer, so it's a great combination.
It's fun, and don't be offended, but we do flirt with each other. At one moment, it just happens. How could you not?
You're you, she's her.
And we're lesbians in theater.
Has to happen. Wink, wink, nod, nod.
The critics call it a blockbuster, a phenomenon, a show that makes you laugh, cry, and think. Audiences call it the most thrillifying theatrical experience of a lifetime. Now, at Chicago's Ford Center Oriental Theater, you can discover for yourself that everything you've heard about Wicked is true. Wicked, the untold story of the Witches of Oz, the musical that changed Chicago for good.
Bosch's favorite team, the Wizard and Lev.
Are you ready to meet the Wizard? Call Ticketmaster.com today.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of June 30th, 2008, you're in Chicago's Culture Club.
Infectious, white hot, says Time Out Chicago. Gender-bending magic, says Performing. And Windy City Times agrees it's moon dance for a marvelous night. Mid-Tangent Productions presents their fourth and final production of the underground hit, A Midsummer Night's Dream, A Queer Tale. Playing July 3rd to August 3rd at the National Pastime Theater, 4139 North Broadway. Get your tickets at tix.com. Love looks not with the eyes, but with the mind. A Midsummer Night's Dream, A Queer Tale.
Now playing at Steppenwolf in the Upstairs Theater, Dead Man's Cell Phone by Sarah Rule. The Reader says it's hilarious and delightful, and the Tribune calls it fearless and surreal. Dead Man's Cell Phone, a quirky modern adventure about a long-distance journey into the mysteries of life. For tickets, visit steppenwolf.org.
Writers Theater presents The Lion in Winter by James Goldman, directed by Rick Snyder. The Wall Street Journal calls it one of the finest shows in recent seasons, not just in Chicagoland, but in all of America. And the Tribune calls it a juicy revival. For tickets and more about The Lion in Winter, log on to writerstheater.org.
For more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hey, this is Cindy Lauper. Big shout out to Windy City Clearcast.
Landau is an award-winning writer, director, teacher, and Steppenwolf Ensemble member. Currently, she is directing Tracy Lett's newest play since its Pulitzer and Tony Award wins with August Osage County. No pressure, Tina.
Yeah.
It is called Superior Donuts, and I'm thrilled to be sitting here on the second floor of the upstairs of Steppenwolf with you live and in person.
It's great. We're on site.
How are
you? In between shows.
Yes, we are.
On a Saturday.
That's just so present and in the moment.
I can't stand it.
Usually I record these things, and it's happening, you know, weeks ahead. And
yeah, no, we just had our third preview.
Yeah?
Yeah, and this is our first five-show weekend.
How are you feeling?
Good. It's
you look rested, which is surprising. I mean, casual, but rested.
I feel very rested, and I feel incredibly relaxed. I don't know how it happened. And it's very odd, because this play, I wasn't supposed to originally direct. Amy Morton was supposed to direct it.
Who's still on Broadway, being a megastar.
Exactly.
And mentioned more than anything at
the
Tony Awards.
Wasn't that great?
He was great.
I know.
It's like, Amy, if you ever been a drinking game and you drank what Amy Morton was said, we'd all be drunk.
I just walk around. I do. I've been walking around here going, Amy Morton, Amy Morton, Amy Morton. I have. But so I came onto this very late. I got a call from Martha Levy, and she said, we're in a bit of a bind. We have this play. Amy's just decided to stay. My guess is they had gone to a couple of other ensemble members before me. I'm not actually positive. But it was whatever it was very late.
Yeah.
And I had other commitments. And I said, if I like the play, I want to do it because it's family here. It sort of felt like Steppenwolf doesn't do this often, where I get a call and they say, we need to ask you to do something for the theater.
Yeah.
And I love this place so much, and I would do anything for this place and these people. So I read the play. Fortunately, I really liked it.
Yeah.
But it's been really a whirlwind. I mean, I had no preparation time. I showed up. Tracy was going through the Pulitzer, the Tonys, the this, the that. And we looked at each other on the first day of rehearsal and said, let's just wing it.
Let's just read the page.
And I have to say, that feeling has never quite gone away. I mean, you would think maybe now with what he's been through, we'd feel a lot of pressure.
Right.
It's really the opposite. We're kind of just all here saying, we're going to do the best we can do with this play that is new, has never been seen for an audience before. We did not do a substantial amount of workshopping so. I feel relaxed. I feel like on the first night, which was two nights ago, when an audience came, they laughed, they leapt to their feet, they followed the story, and I just said a gigantic phew.
Yeah.
Mostly because I was just relieved that I hadn't ruined it. That's really
which
what
is
I
successful.
Felt like.
You know, if you don't cause harm to the project,
exactly.
You're probably at least halfway there.
Exactly. But, you know, it's not the kind of play I traditionally direct.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because I mean it's
Superior Donuts, a very Chicago story. Last time you were here was at Anne Frank, Diary of Anne Frank. Uh-huh. And then you've done some of your own work here, uh-huh. and you've also done musical here and around town.
Right.
This is, tell me the story of Superior Donuts, because it does take place in very Chicago settings,
references much
of the city.
Yes, it takes place in a donut shop in the uptown neighborhood of Chicago.
Near where I live.
Right, probably.
Don't stalk me, you listeners. Do not.
Streets like Wilson, Sheridan, Broadway, those are all the main streets referenced in the play. It takes place in the donut shop, owned by a gentleman named Arthur Shubrzewski, a Polish-American, who we discover has sort of holed up in his own existence and doesn't really interact with the world in any proactive way. And into his shop one day comes this kid, Franco Wicks, played by John Hill, who's an ensemble member here. And by the way, Arthur is played by Michael McKean, who
Genius.
I can tell you more about if you want after
I
this.
I love
yeah,
him.
He's really great.
Oh, I just love him. I mean, audiences will obviously know him from as far back as Laverne and Shirley and up through Christopher Guest films.
I have never watched Laverne and Shirley. I had never seen it. Can you believe so?
We're taking away your lesbian card. How could you not have loved Laverne and Shirley?
I had a very very conflicted relationship with television, period. Like, I went through most of my life not watching it, and I'm an addict now. So.
Well, this is good. We'll talk about that later. We'll talk about addictions later in the interview, and I really loosen you up.
Right. But anyway, so it's this kid comes into the shop and kind of wants to turn it and Arthur's life around. And it's the story really of their relationship and Arthur's transformation in the course of the play, with a lot of backstory stuff for both characters that comes out in the course of the action and causes various plot twists and turns that I won't spoil here.
Interesting that Mr. Letts, knowing with August too, he likes, and even what I know from Bug and some of his other plays, he likes kind of these insular characters that are kind of isolated, and that's just fascinating. I hadn't thought about that at all. What do you find so compelling about Tracy's writing? I mean, obviously because it's really the writing and the actors that are carrying you when you start the way you did with this one, where it's not about all this stuff.
No,
that
it's not. It's not theatrical. You know, we were joking at the beginning. Tracy said he hoped we had worked together, and he assumed it would be as an actor with me directing him. He never thought I'd want to direct one of his plays. And I said, I never thought you'd ask me to direct one of your plays.
Huh.
And I really had this moment where I thought, can I direct a play that takes place in a completely naturalistic room?
Yeah.
Like, do I know how to, you know, have actors pick up props?
And, yeah.
You know, it really has felt like that. But I do love Tracy's writing. I have grown to be not only an admirer of his, but I hope, like, a real friend. I just had never really known the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to Martha Levy yesterday, I'm so grateful for this opportunity. You know, because I had an impression of Tracy, and I thought he was really kind of snarky and dark and a little twisted. And then I saw August, and I thought, oh, he actually kind of has a big heart in there. And then
you saw him at the Tony Awards saying, like, thank you for putting on stage actors,
theater actors
in a play.
Yeah.
What a slam. I was wondering, who's going to applaud in the audience for that since we have, like, Katie Holmes Marissa Tomei.
Well, I mean, he had just been handed the award by Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah,
so,
Daniel Radcliffe.
Right. But what I find compelling about Tracy's writing is not only is it complex and about things, but he has this uncanny ability to tap into audience sensibility. He's like a great populist master or something. I can't believe what's going on in this theater. In our first three previews, he has some chemical superpower that it's like a secret power. That's what I feel like right now. I don't know what Tracy...
It's like a Wonder Twin.
It is.
Without the other half.
It is.
Maybe you'll be the other half to him.
No, because I don't have that power.
That's not true.
I was completely
you have a different Wonder
denied
Twin
that power.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but it's really fun to be a part of writing that leaps off the page and into a theater in this kind of chemical fashion.
Yeah, so. And audiences are already eating up. I can't wait to see this show. I want to talk to you about... I want to talk to you because it's very rare that I get to talk to lesbians gay women in theater.
Okay, I was like, what's the end of that sentence?
No, I talk to lesbians all the time. But lesbians in theater, you know, we've kind of laughed. It's very funny. Can I tell you the funny thing that when I'm so being personal, which they know I do all the time anyhow, but when I met my girlfriend Kelly here at this theater, and it was very funny because she emailed a friend of hers here who actually saw your play two nights ago, loves it, and said, you know, I met somebody while I was here in town at Steppenwolf, and I guess she's big lesbian about town, and I have to, you know, give me a call and then we'll talk. And he emailed her back and said, who did you meet? Tina Landau? Question. Amy Matheny?
Oh,
question.
No.
And I was like, I'm so proud that I was in the only two people he mentioned besides,
oh,
you know,
no, there
was
must
Tina.
Be
but then
others.
I laughed and I said, wait a minute, she's kind of honorary Chicagoan. She doesn't really live here.
No,
I should have been first.
It's right, absolutely. It's probably just because it was Steppenwolf. But it is always surprising how many
we're techies,
gay
you
men.
Know. Gay women are techies. My father, when he said, "I know you're gay because you hang around the theater," I said, "Well, then I should be a gay man. I should be a showgirl man."
You're
know,
just like Tracy. This is you just go right for the jugular and say it like it is,
I'm
baby.
I'm telling you, it's totally crazy. But I want to, you know, I mean, has being queer affected you as a writer, as a director, as a teacher? Has that been a part of it? Do you feel a part of this gay theatrical aesthetic, or is there one anymore?
Well, I have to say, I've just recently, in the last several years, been aware of what a male gay mafia there is in New York theater, which for some reason I just grew up a little oblivious to. I really sense it
Did
now.
They like you? See, the gay mafia likes me, so you kind of are just a part of.
Well,
you're a lesbian, and then when you kind of
go,
sure, wait a minute,
they like
not
me,
like you.
But it's definitely, professionally, it's a closed system.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter that I'm a lesbian or, you know, it doesn't matter because I'm not a gay man.
Right.
Basically.
Yes.
So
you're
you
female.
Know, that
it doesn't matter.
No, so that excludes a lot of us.
Yeah.
You know. So there's that. The thing that's really interesting is I have found my way into so many plays and experiences by my general experience of being an outsider, quote unquote. You know, I look through most of drama and I find something I can tap into easily that is about some sort of experience of isolation or segregation, or, you know, some story of the individual versus the institution or the collective or whatever it is. And I've been very aware of how, both as a woman, as a lesbian, as a Jew,
I don't have that third question. I get it, like Southern
others.
Methodist. I don't
there
know.
You
there you go.
But
the religious filter has to go through somehow, just like the sexual orientation filter.
Yeah,
it all goes
but
through.
But it does. It definitely feeds my work. My experience of being in the world has greatly informed how I read and express things in the theater.
Yeah.
I mean, completely.
Yeah.
Completely.
And I kind of can't not. I mean, because
right.
all you have
well,
to bring
exactly.
to it is who you are.
I mean, in terms of my sort of goings-ons institutionally in theaters and all that, it's never... I just feel so blessed to have grown up in the time I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of that all the time. Because I even think back to when I was in college and the difference between then and now and how I would only say it then. I would say... you know, do you want to, like, someone I had a crush on, do you want to talk about it? I remember when I didn't have the words.
Yeah.
And in my lifetime, how grateful I am to be able to have this kind of interview.
Yeah.
Without blinking an eye.
Yeah.
For myself.
Yeah. And it's probably a very different kind of interview, because I was actually saying to somebody I was going to interview you, and they were asking me to ask you all this theatrical stuff, and I was like, I could do that, or we could have a conversation that she probably doesn't get to have.
No, hardly
which
ever.
Which is, you
hardly
know,
ever.
Which is interesting, I think.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the viewpoints.
Oh.
It's a big part of,
uh-huh.
of
uh-huh.
you know, your teaching,
uh-huh.
How you approach work. It's an approach to theater and acting that you teach here at Steppenwolf and around.
Uh-huh.
And there's a book about it that you
uh-huh.
wrote with Anne Bogart.
Uh-huh.
For a non theater person. Mm-hmm. What is it?
What are viewpoints?
Is there? I mean, obviously, you've written a book on it, so give me your topic sentence that kind of is like the pitch.
It's easier said than done. Yeah. It's a... See? It's a...
Read the book.
Pay to come to a workshop. It's a... the words that come to my mind are like system, methodology, vocabulary, but they all feel kind of reductive. Yeah. But it's a system, a theory that you can use in making work or in viewing work and any kind of work in theater, in performance, in art, in dance, in music, that helps break down a piece of art into various elements, which are... The crudest way to think of it is points of view that you have while working or making something. So the elements, for instance, are tempo, duration, shape, gesture. And I use viewpoints both to create ensemble, to make staging or choreography, and just as a vocabulary that becomes a big shortcut for how I work.
Yeah.
But it's sort of the central method I have for making theater.
And you use it continually when you're working on your own projects, because as a writer, you know, you're obviously working with Tracy Letts material now, but this is a way that you find to approach stories or themes or situations that you want to explore. Mm-hmm. You have a new project, which is a musical called Beauty that you're working on. Uh-huh. What's it about?
It's a riff on Sleeping Beauty. I did
Aurora.
Yes, Aurora, but in this version...
From Disney.
Disney.
But I had that kind of childhood, Tina. Yeah. I'm that kind of lesbian.
This is the answer, too.
Ah.
This is...
Are you getting on the Wicked train? This is all I want to know.
No.
Okay, good.
No. Actually, this is something that I wrote a play version of that was done in La Jolla, at La Jolla Playhouse. I think in like 2002 or something. And something I've been working on for a long time. And it's a big musical piece. I'm currently working with Michael Corey, who's the lyricist who did most recently Grey Gardens.
Mm.
And I think I'm giving you like a big scoop here. I don't know if
I'm allowed to say this, but
this is like off the record.
Okay. OTR, folks.
Yeah. Regina Spektor is writing the music. I don't know if you know her stuff, but she we were working with a different composer and timing.
Yeah.
We were working with Janine Tesori, who did Violet and Caroline or Change, but she's doing Shrek, and that sort of took her away from the project for a while.
Just interviewed Jason Moore a little while ago.
Oh, yeah?
Avenue Q.
Oh,
talking
cool.
About Shrek.
Yeah. So Regina has just come on board, and it's me, Michael, and Regina, and I am loving working with her, and I'm a big fan of her music. So
she's been on tour with True Colors.
Exactly.
She's on tour with Miss Cindy Lauper
and Carson,
who were just on our show, too.
Exactly. I just flew in last Monday to meet with her, and she had just gotten back from Philly, I think,
during that tour. Yeah. What fun is that? Yeah. She did not come to Chicago, but she's out on the
Cindy Lauper did it.
Yep. Yeah. Cindy's doing all of them.
Yeah.
And,
right.
That's
exactly.
So fun. So what is it about musicals? I mean, you have... you've worked on many. You did this Broadway revival of Bells Are Ringing.
Yeah.
You bowed a little Joe here. I mean,
it's
so funny. You don't strike me as a musical person, but now that you say you didn't watch television growing up, I'm wondering if you were kind of one of the old movie musical buffs or
something. Well, I grew up in New York going to Broadway shows.
Yeah.
And my parents, my whole family was in film.
Uh-huh.
But I went to see Broadway shows from when I was a little kid. I play piano.
What was your first... The musical you saw.
You know what? I went from when I was so young that I can't recall.
I saw 42nd Street with Leroy Reams.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, I'm aging myself. I was 10 maybe, and I'd never seen anything so magnificent in my life as all these tap dancing people. And
well,
the story
of
the girl who gets to go on.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
The girl who gets the gig.
Exactly. So that's what hooked you.
Jeez, yeah.
I mean, I saw Hair when it first opened. I remember Hair. I remember Jesus Christ Superstar.
Which started here.
Started in Chicago. I thought it started at the Public in New York.
I don't know.
Whatever.
Grease started here. Or Hair.
Okay,
I thought
whatever.
Hair and Grease started here. Maybe
whatever.
Grease started here and Hair started there. I'll give New York something. Come on, we take a lot.
I remember Dreamgirls and Chorus Line.
Yeah.
Anyway, all that. But
my parents were horrified when they took me to see a Chorus Line because I couldn't stop singing Dance 10,
Looks
3, and I
was
like 11.
Yeah.
They were so glad they got tickets to Annie, but I was so much more enraptured with the Chorus Line.
and I was singing and
nonstop.
What's
your story?
It was, I wish it was. I don't have the tits to show it off, so I don't know. I got the ass, but not the tits.
Oh, musicals. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm talking about TNA.
No, it's good. Yeah, it's good. I know. I got very distracted, Amy. My mind just went elsewhere.
It's okay.
No, but, you know.
She is a bona fide lesbian, folks. That's what I'll say.
You know, I grew up always, like, especially when I was at Yale undergrad, I remember feeling like I had this artistic schizophrenia where I was doing this sort of avant-garde, very serious postmodern theater on the one hand, and then directing Music Man and Guys and Dolls, and I was kind of in the closet. I remember saying that I was in some Broadway closet with myself, and I wouldn't admit it for a long time. And I feel like most of my adult life has been some synthesis of those two great loves of mine. And I feel like the work I do now, I said to Tracy just the other day in working on Superior Donuts, I'm really approaching it musically. I feel rhythm and tempo and codas, and it's just how I experience time.
And you said you play music.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I dance, so I get that. Like, I used to. So, like, for me, it's all about rhythm.
Yeah.
You know, even language. It's why I loved Shakespeare, because it just tapped me right in, which you also be doing. You'll be doing The Tempest here.
Very, very excited and very scared.
Yeah. Mr. Galati.
Yeah.
Granddaddy Galati. That's going to be genius.
No, it's going to be scary.
It's going to be scary. We'll talk next year about The Tempest. But I do, we got to wrap this up because you've got another show. But I did want to ask, which I love to ask artists and musicians and actors, who are some artists that you'd love to work with that you haven't? I'm going to take you through some categories. Some writers? Are there some writers that inspire you to adapt their work?
Yeah,
work with
Jeanette Winterson.
Oh, I've interviewed her.
Really?
I was terrified, and she was lovely. Yeah, many years ago.
Neil Gaiman. Or Gaiman, I'm not sure how to even pronounce his name. He wrote the Sandman series of, like, graphic novels.
Interesting. All right, tell me, composers or musicians?
Oh, yeah, well, that list goes on endlessly. John Zorn, who you might not know, he's New York composer, who's very, very wild and experimental and brilliant. I'd actually like to work with Patricia Barber, but, you know, that's actually on my list. Like,
we'll hang out
at
the Green Mill when you come back.
Yeah.
Like, just hang out and don't smoke and don't talk. These are the two things that you can't smoke
anymore. I've actually, believe it or not, I'm going to admit, never been there.
You've never been to the Green Mill?
No.
That is so what I'm doing with you when you come back.
You know what? I really want to do that.
And I've heard Patricia Barber so many Monday, Sunday, when she shifted nights. And, you know, back then it was like, if you really want in her good graces, you do not speak while she sings. She's very particular.
Well,
but she's
genius. And I just thought, she's here. She's in the city. I have this theater. I love music. It seems like someone I should collaborate with.
It does. I can't even understand her. Her jazz is on such a plane. I love listening to her.
So I don't know what it would be. And then she did this mythologies thing where she was sort of getting into some storytelling. And I don't know. So I'm just interested in that as a notion.
Interesting. Anybody else?
And John Zorn and Regina, who I'm working with, and Adam Gettle, who I'm always going to work with, and, you know.
Brilliant. And what about actors? I mean, give me, like, a dream
Amy
list.
Amy Martin.
Yeah, well, you worked with Amy, haven't you?
A lot.
You know what's so funny is that I met you, and we were discussing this before I started recording, that I met you when you came to see the very first Xena Live, and there had been a press release on that show that said, you know, Xena Live, starring Elizabeth Laidlaw, Alexander Billings, and Amy Morton. And
I was funny.
And Amy, we were laughing so
you
hard.
You could be compared to worse.
I said, wow, you know, I would have stepped aside if I had thought she would have come and done her little late night $20 show. But
it's one of the best shows I've ever seen.
Oh,
really,
you're so sweet.
I still think about it.
We have so much fun.
You know, I really, there's a whole slew of actors right here in this ensemble that I really want to work with.
It's such fertile.
It is. I just feel like until I've, you know, worked with everyone here at Steppenwolf, I won't be complete.
Yeah. So you don't pipe dream of, like, the Oscar winner or the...
No.
No. Good for you.
I really don't.
It's just homegrown.
Homegrown.
Good stuff.
Even though
I'm
a New
Yorker,
homegrown Chicago.
Yeah.
From a girl from New York.
You're starting to become a Chicagoan. It happens. Yeah. You don't have to stay long.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Superior Donuts is playing now at the Steppenwolf Theater on the main stage through August 17th. As you know, with his last play here, you couldn't get a ticket. So do not wait, folks. If you want tickets and information, we'll have it linked in our show notes, but you can also just visit steppenwolf.org. It's simple, simple. And Tina, thanks for being
Amy.
On the show.
This was great.
So glad. Yeah, a lot
thank
of fun.
You. Good.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of
Today we salute you, Mr. Blue Aluminum Bottle Maker.
Mr. Blue Aluminum Bottle Maker.
Your amazing creation allows us to keep our beer, our hands, and the Arctic ice shelf completely cool.
It's really, really cold.
The only problem we have taking a drink, removing our lips from the bottle after taking a drink.
My lips are stuck.
Sure, we need a beer this cold. Should we ever find ourselves running wind sprints at the bottom of an active volcano?
I'm on fire!
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Frider of the Frigid. Now, can somebody please pry this bottle from my frozen hand?
Mr. Blue Aluminum Bottle Maker!
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
So, Kelly, I'm almost to O'Hare, which means I'm flying to Tennessee.
Your weave is almost ready.
My weave is almost ready. It's sheer genius, as Jacqueline Smith would say. She's
looking good.
She's O'Hare.
Would that we all would look that good at however old she is.
Do you think she's had work, Jacqueline Smith?
I think she's probably had a few pokes and...
Do you?
Maybe, yeah.
I don't know. Some
talks.
God, she looks good.
She does.
She looks great.
And if she hasn't, all the better.
I wonder what her favorite donut is. We could probably...
Really? Do you care?
Yeah, maybe I could seduce her with my, sending her a box of Bavarian cream.
I don't know that the donut hole would be the lesbian donut of choice, would it?
No.
Maybe the donut ball?
I don't know. I sent her a strawberry iced, which was always interesting in concept, but... not really superior in execution.
I love the strawberry cherry filled.
Ooh, no, I don't like the fruit.
Oh, no, I like the things that you bite into and it squeezes out on your
like
chin.
Like freshen up gum. Oh!
Please do.
We're so not editing that.
Delete.
So
it's delete.
Boop. You have not got that power.
I did love those cherry filled, though.
Okay.
I really did.
All right. That kind of grosses me out, too. That and the fanny pack. I'm learning too much about you.
I don't have
podcast.
The fanny pack now. It was a bad... youthful choice. I needed to. I didn't. What does a lesbian do who doesn't carry a handbag or a purse?
You hopefully have a feminine girlfriend who's carrying a purse.
See, but I've had many of those, and they're like, "Keep your shit on your own person.
Well,
I ain't
that's
lugging that
what
crap around for you."
That's usually what I do. Well,
it's
I'm
true.
Pulling up to American Airlines, not to make a plug and a shameless plug, but it's what I'm doing.
It's true. You
it's
have to
true.
Try.
And I'm going to go home to Tennessee because I think to be proud, you need to go back to your roots and thank the breeders who brung you here. So I'm going home and thinking Leo in Virginia and my nanny.
They still have all their teeth, folks.
They have all their teeth and they wear shoes on a regular basis. It's all good. So miss me.
I will.
The podcasters will miss me. Maybe they'll post some comments and tell us about your favorite donut. I have to say the hot Krispy Kreme right off the machine line is probably the superior donut.
I had never had a Krispy Kreme until I moved to New York. Never even heard of it.
Oh, gosh. Now we're running over the slow it down at the O'Hare, so you can really, we're taking this podcast everywhere.
We're rolling over the slow it down, is that what those lines are called?
We're rolling over the slow it downs. I don't know. This is digressing
it
so
is.
Bad. So I'm going to get in the departure lane, we're going to depart from the show, and Kelly, you'll be with us on the next show, except I'll be back by then, and I'll tell you about Tennessee.
All right, I look forward to it.
And I don't know what else we'll talk about.
I know.
Go have a curler.
A crawler, not a curler.
A crawler. And go have a Boston cream. And
I hope no one cancels their podcast subscription over this
it's
one.
It's free. They don't fucking
You'll
care.
You'll get to hear Tina. It's much more exciting.
You've heard Tina. It's been worth it. You've probably shut us off by now already, anyhow. All right. I'll miss you.
I'll miss you.
And I'll miss all of you. Tell us your favorite superior donut.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming. Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, Amy Wooten, news editor, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.